Mavis Staples and the Staple Singers with Why Am I Treated So Bad? This is an internal question. You're trying to do everything right, and then your whole life hangs on a thread because somebody decides they don't agree with you. So you get treated really badly. This is from her, what album did I say this was from? I didn't. Okay, so I'll have to look it up. But this is Mavis Staples and the Staple Singers. In the Glynn County Courthouse in Brunswick, Georgia, state prosecutors yesterday arrested their case against three white men, Gregory McMichael, 64, his 35-year-old son, Travis McMichael, and William Roddy Bryan, a 52-year-old family friend and neighbor of the Travises. Lead Stories listeners were on the right track. They were right on it in pointing up major issues in the case as the courtroom battle unfolded. And then again, they were right on it as lawyers for the three defendants hinted at their client's side of the story. So we have questions today. We're back to those questions, those annoying and very troubling questions. And we have some today that will form the basis of our discussion. Will there be a theme to the defendant's arguments? What should we expect to hear? How will they explain their actions that fateful day, February the 23rd, 2020, when Ahmaud Arbery was jogging through their predominantly white neighborhood, but was chased instead by the trio and brutally killed? That's a question as the defense saddles up to take on these questions and others. What we want to do, because we have been observing this case, and we have our own questions. And these are questions that should occur to every person, really. Not just the legal experts, but you've been observing the trial. We've been talking about it. And now we see that the prosecution has rested and the defense is now taking up the gauntlet. We should be primed by now, in this case, about certain issues that cannot be avoided and should not be avoided and must be answered by the defense for these three men charged in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery. And that's where we're going today. I know people think, well, you know, you talk, Patrice, as if you expect us to know the law. No. Please don't misunderstand. I am operating on the assumption that you've been on this earth for quite some time. You've seen all kinds of craziness in your time. This case is not exceptionally crazy when you look at it in the context of history, but we should have an idea by now, all of us. You don't have to be a legal expert, and that's not the point of the exercise. The point of the exercise is that you simply use your brain, and you can figure out quite a few things about this case. At another time, we will have the expert lawyers come in and talk about it, because there's much about this case that needs to be discussed at that level. What I wanted us to do was to kind of give a snapshot from our own perspective. We are not lawyers, we are not experts. But in a way, we've been here before as well. And we have a thing or two that we can contribute to this discussion, which must not be avoided. And so you take advantage of the opportunity and you bring forth what intuitively you feel about this case. And then we go from there. The number to call is, you know it by now, it should be stamped on your forehead, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And that's what we're talking about today. As the defense takes up the mantle of responsibility for defending the three men charged in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, what do you expect their line, their theory, will be? How will they fortify that argument? How will they position the three men with respect to this killing? What will be the explanation as to the nature of the contact between them and Ahmaud Arbery, who was just jogging? Everybody admits he was jogging through the community where he lives adjacently. He lives in a community adjacent to it. This is a predominantly white community. And then all hell breaks loose because he was seen jogging, and then a chase ensues. And of course, he's running. People trying to catch him and do something wrong, something bad to him. And that compounds the belief on the part of the three men that he must have done something wrong. He must be guilty of something. So let us complete the chase and see what happens from there. And of course, we know what happened from there. 888-874-4888. What do you expect to hear as the lawyers for the defense present what they consider to be the argument that gives rationale for the behavior and the deeds of the three men? What could possibly have caused them to act this way? Were they under some direct threat? What will be the theme? What would be the theme of their argument? Ed from Queens, you start us off today.
Hey, good afternoon, Latrice. How are you?
Okay, Ed, how are you?
You know, me and the thumbs still here.
You're still hanging in by your thumbs.
In these interesting times. Well, I've done a little research into this case, as you know, from your initial inquiry into it as far as it being a topic of discussion. From what I've read in the papers and from watching the trial on YouTube, I think the defense is going to be fundamentally going on the vague. Well, their legal case, in my opinion, what they're going to present is that vague statute on citizen's arrest. They're going to try to present these three men acting under the auspices of that vague law that's on the Georgia books, and they're going to try to paint Ahmaud Arbery as a possible assailant. I mean, I don't know. I was reading in some articles that there was an issue of the son of the three, out of the three gentlemen, the son and the father were in law enforcement. And the son might have even had some, while he was in law enforcement, might have had some type of altercation or interaction with Ahmed Arbery while he was in law enforcement. I don't know if that's going to play into it or not. I didn't hear anything about it with the prosecution as far as using it as a prejudice, but I don't know if the defense is going to try to throw that in there to sort of like blame the victim, so to speak, in my opinion. But I think they're going to play this on that loose legal statute of citizen's arrest that was in Georgia before the governor amended it, because it was a very vague law as far as to what empowers you to perform a citizen's arrest, how long you can detain someone, what information you have to go on, be it visual or be it hearsay. Those details in the law were very vague initially. And I'm going to think that he's going to put these men's actions under that venue.
Well, even if they do, let's say they decide to talk about the fact that they were acting under the color of citizen's arrest. Does it, in your view, because you've done a little bit of checking, does it pass muster at all that they were qualified or that they seemed to understand that they had the law on their side as they proposed to act as a trio and as they proposed to severely curtail Ahmed Arbery's civil rights?
Well, that's the problem with these citizens, quote-unquote, citizens' arrest or citizens enacting laws. They're not being deputized. Usually these citizens' arrest laws come in conjunction when someone's trying to institute a neighborhood watch. And police precincts around America, when they're trying to institute a citizens watch organization or program in your neighborhood, and I've participated in those, they tell us when you go to the department in your local area and you present your proposal for citizens patrol because there's been some criminal activity in the neighborhood, drugs or mugging, so on and so forth, like I did in South Jamaica a few years back. The first thing the police tell you is you are not the law. You are our eyes and you are our ears. You are not the law. And they explain New York's citizen's arrest rule to you or what empowers you if you see a crime, what you can do. But they tell you do not construe this law do not construe citizen's arrest as being your right to go out there and be the posse comitatus. That being said, I don't know what happens in Georgia, but I'm pretty sure that is the consensus pertaining to how to apply citizen's arrest. The statute was vague. The governor, after the death of Ahmed Arbery in February, changed the law. He brought it before the city council or the state assembly in that part of Georgia, and they changed the law to make it more descriptive. But initially, the law was vague. It didn't have the nuances to say, you have to see someone committing a crime. You have a certain amount of time to detain this person. If this person resists, you cannot use deadly force. You cannot use any force unless this person is threatening your life, threatening the life of another, or threatening property, which is how some of these citizens' arrest laws state. And you have to call the police in a certain amount of time. In New York, and I believe in Georgia, it's an hour. You have to inform the police, hey, I caught this guy in the process of a crime. I have him here. Please come get him. The police are supposed to come and take charge of the situation. So that being said, with the vagueness of the law and the disposition of the jury, I think they're going to play like, you know, these were honest citizens. The two men have law enforcement background, so you assume that they knew the constraints or the restrictions of the law as civilians, as being prior law enforcement. And the third man was there to document the events. That's why we have a videotape. And if that's enough for reasonable doubt, I don't know. I mean, with jury selection, it could be.
In the course of the trial, insofar as you have, been privy to the trial, do these explanations suffice to support the claim of these men that they were, in fact, making a citizen's arrest?
Me, personally, no. I mean, I'm familiar with that section of America, and I have family that lives down there on my mother's side, and I know the unwritten law, the unwritten rule. Like Brother David said, the sundown rule or the sundown towns. So to me, no. But I'm prejudiced, to be honest with you, based on my prior experience. But would it be enough for the average Caucasian individual living in that town and with their biases? I mean, everybody, ideally, you want your jury to be objective and deal with the facts. But in reality, people bring their biases to everything, whether consciously or subconsciously. So you got 11 white men or 11 white people saying, you present this to them, I don't know if they have the ability to be that objective in this case.
All right. Well, you got us started, and it's a good start, so thank you for that. John from
thank
New
you.
Jersey, you're on the air at 888-874-4888. You're on the air.
I'm so light. I feel like I am on the air. That makes any sense. You know what? First of all, he broke rule number one. He did something while being black. He was jogging while being black. This is a penalty by death in good old US of A. Every time Ed gets on before me, he says such profound things, and he knows his subject so well, I lose track of what I called for. But it's just remarkable to me that this isn't an open and shut case where these dudes would at least be looking at life in prison for being major league boneheads. That's what they are. They know nothing but violence. They know nothing but force. That's the way they live their lives. And we have to, try to survive while that's all going on. It's just a very sad state of affairs. And I'm not a praying man, but these days I'm actually thinking maybe we could use some help from the big guy. I don't know what else to say. Meanwhile, you can get on.
Let's talk about the specifics of the trial that kind of jumped out at you more so than other parts of the trial. What would you say were significant points in the trial and why?
Well, the first significant point was, why did they call the police that first second they thought that they were going to go and try to attack this guy with a shotgun? I mean, please, he must have been terrified, absolutely terrified. So I could build a case if I was an attorney that not only did they murder this man, but they were terrorists too. They're terrorists. They terrorize people. That's the way they live their lives. And unfortunately, we don't have eyes in back of our heads. So, it's one of those. What jumps out at me right now is that we're having this discussion. Are these guys in jail right now? Are they sitting behind bars right now? I'd like to know the answer to that question. Other than that, I don't know what else to say, but it's an atrocity, and it's time it was over. Really, really is time it's been over. The feminine example of these dudes, the way they should have been with the cop that strangled with the guy that strangled the policeman in Staten Island, with the other guy with his knee on the shit. I mean, give me a break. These people supposedly know what they're doing. And they are so off base. It's like they should be kicked off the field for the rest of their season. It's a joke. Other than that,
those are your opinions. Now let's talk some facts. What facts did you glean from this trial that you consider significant facts that should play a major role in deciding what to do with these men?
Well, what fact do I don't know. Usually, before I say anything, I say allegedly. I usually say allegedly, yes. Because allegedly covers your rear end in a lot of certain circumstances. What's the question again? What fact? I tell you what fact. They ran down a guy, unarmed guy, jogging, innocently jogging in a neighborhood. Maybe he came up a couple of steps and he was looking for a possible place to move to. Who knows? All I know is that he's minding his own business, he's out for a jog, and the next thing you know, he's dead. That's all I know. That's a big fact. And as far as I'm concerned, that's exactly how I think that they should treat these guys, their trial of these three boneheads, as I said. Other than that, I'll just end up being redundant, okay? So,
all right.
Thanks for your show, and keep at it.
Thank you very much for your call. 888-874-4888. We're looking today for you to identify where you think the defense arguments are going to go based on what has transpired in the court and hints that we have been given listening to the trial, listening to the points raised in the trial. What do you expect would now happen in this phase of the case where the defense will be raising questions that in turn will raise doubts? The prosecution has done a reasonably good job of laying out the deliberate acts and therefore the deliberate thinking of the three men as they collectively chased Ahmad Aubrey. They did a good job of that. They had the visual, the film footage, if you will, showing that Aubrey was actually trying to defend himself. It may turn out in the defense arguments that Ahmad Aubrey was actually fighting. But indeed, we saw in that film, that footage that was taken by the neighbor, that he was trying to get the gun away from him. And he, at that time, he was cornered as well. So what is the defense going to say about this incident? How will it position this conflict that ended in Ahmad Aubrey's death? 888-874-4888. What are you expecting? What do you think the prosecution, having already concluded its statement, what do you think the prosecution's argument is? Is it looking like it would hold? Or does the defense have something that you think will be presented as the big surprise? Positive from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Good afternoon.
In answer to your question, I think that the defense is probably going to rally on the fact that there was a somewhat convenient, again, filming him on the property of the individuals that are being accused of the murder there. Of looking, I don't know what he was doing, but they had him on film looking. And then
yes,
from there,
the property, you should mention, at the time that he was on the property looking, it was unguarded. It was open.
Oh, I know all that. Right, true. You're right. What I'm saying,
this has to be said, because most people may not know.
You're right. On the property that, like you said, it was public property at the time. It was not so much public property; it was unguarded, like you would see any other house that was being in the process of being fixed up or whatever you have there. So he merely was on the property. He couldn't. There was nothing that he could have put in his pocket. I mean, other than putting a 2x4 or something, which obviously he didn't do. And then from there, he left the property and continued on his way, jogging and so on and so forth. I don't know why, but this reminds me of a movie back in the days of Cornbread Earl and Me, you know, in regards to someone running and then a black man running and then getting shot, you know. Also, like I said, they would. I see them as using that as a defense, and also using the fact of when they did catch up with him, that saying that according to them that he was being defensive or violent towards them, so that justified them using the means they used to. Actually kill him. Whether it was right or wrong, I don't see it that way, but I can see them rallying him on that. I, too, as I think one of the two or the other callers have had experience, which I've told you in the past, of being in Georgia or Mississippi, and knowing how they act towards black people or non-white people in Pacific. And when these laws were enacted, especially the citizens arrest law back in the slave times and post-slave times, that mentality that was there back then still lingers on to this day. And even though they may have amended it with certain specifics or guidelines, that doesn't come to play when you consider the environment of the South. Then
yes, but we're straying off our topic today. Let's stay with what was asked. What was asked is, what do you see being raised by the defense as a defense?
Well, initially, what I stated to you initially, and that was the fact that they're going to rally on the tape and the filming of him going to the property. And because he went to the property and then left,
just list it and move on.
Justified.
Why are you saying that it would be important? This tape will be important for the defense.
Because
why?
Because in the mindset. So we got to understand the constituents that we're dealing with, and that is the white people in that environment, those who are on trial, and the constituents, the other white people that live in that community and thereabouts. Seeing a black man on the scene and then leaving the scene in their eyesight is suspicious. And you don't have to be in Georgia for that to have, for whites to have
but
that.
You see, we're looking for facts here. The theory of that argument. So far, nothing.
Well, it's a fact that they do have a filming of him on the property. Is it not? That's a fact.
Yes, but he was not the only one on the property.
Understood. But your question you asked me is what defense they're going to raise. And I'm saying they're going to use that to justify a reasonable, in other words, a reasonable stance of or position of the defendant's client's suspicion, enough to justify them going after him the way they did.
Even
now,
so,
in my eyesight.
So let's say, they have a picture of him looking around the house that was under construction. There was no fence. There was no warning.
Right.
Did the killers, the alleged killers, did they call the police and alert the police that this is what they're seeing at such and such an address? Okay, so then they were not acting as neighborhood watch people. They were not fulfilling their function.
I agree with you in context of rightness, and you know what I'm saying, of the law or rightness of justice and so on and so forth. But I'm saying to you, what the defense is going to use, knowing the constituents that he's addressing, this is what he's going to use. Because if you look at the argument so far, what is he saying?
He still has to be, the defense will still have to explain the correctness of their client's actions. And so far, they don't have anything to work with. So you see a black man walking around a house under construction and looking around. And he takes nothing, and after a while, he just leaves, just like many others apparently had done.
Right.
Okay, so now explain why Ahmaud Arbery deserved to be killed for that.
Oh, no way. I'm not going to play devil's advocate and for them to explain their argument. I'm only saying what defense, what they would use. Now, what jurisprudence they would use to justify their argument after stating that remains to be seen. So
The owner of the property had testified. He didn't ask anybody to watch his property.
Hmm.
He did not ask for that kind of help.
Well, you know, there were owners of the property, if you can put that, you know, if you can say that, with Emmett Till. And they didn't ask for
Let's stay with, we know we're dealing with this particular
right,
case.
But I'm trying to get you.
Don't bring anything else into it.
Right, but I'm trying to convey to you the mindset of white people.
No, you can't say that because you don't know the mindset of every white person.
Right. I may not know the mindset of every white person, but I'm saying the mindset of people that would respond like that. That's what I mean when I say that. You know, in Pacific, I don't mean every individual white person, but I'm seeing people that will respond like that towards a black man or non-black man in regards to citizens' arrest and justifying it with violence to that nature. That's what I mean by that. I thought you understood that part.
So what is the argument, therefore? What is the argument, therefore, that you expect the defense to raise as they close out this case in support of their clients, the three men?
Well, I would guarantee you that in Georgia that they can find some precedent, some case law. I don't have any that I recall right now in Pacific, but I remember going throughout the years, going back 40 years or more, but I don't have any Pacific that I can cite to you. But I guarantee you that there's some case law that they can recite.
Okay.
That's
familiar. Well, we're looking for specifics today. We're looking for specifics. The case is now in the hands of the defense attorneys, and they're making their arguments, and we are prognosticating based on our observations of the first half of the trial and what was said about how the defense lawyers are going to situate this case in the minds of the public and certainly in the minds of the jury.
Right.
Thanks for calling and contributing. Brother David,
you're very welcome.
Beyond here.
Good afternoon, everyone. I look at this case this way. I'll just preface it by saying I have lived in South Georgia. I know about it. The point is, when the jury was selected, I'm sure the defense lawyers decided they were going to pick people who would be sympathetic to this particular case and who are familiar with the protocols of behavior between the different groups in that area of Georgia. So I think what's going to happen with the defense presentation is that they're going to appeal to these people on the jury who are quite familiar with the protocols in terms of the behavior of different groups. Number one, the prototype phenotype black group and the phenotype white group and how you're supposed to act. And this man, Mr. Aubrey, he got himself into a position where he was violating what would be a normal protocol or his place. So they're going to appeal to those jurors in that way. I don't know the law, but the point is that is what I would think that the defense lawyers would do. And see, if you violate the protocols for that part of the country and you don't know your place, you might be at a big disadvantage if someone decides to take some action against you. And I believe that's what happened to Mr. Aubrey.
Okay, but that's your personal opinion. I'm asking, how does that correspond to notions of the law, especially at this time in the trial, when they're closing out the arguments? How would the lawyers for the defendants, where are they going to go with this case? What are they going to try to sell to the court and to the public about the legitimacy of their client's actions?
Well, I am not sure about that, but I will even believe that they might, even so this Mr. Aubrey was unarmed, they might even try to say it was a matter of self-defense. So, you know, that's possible. And with the idea that you're dealing with people who understand how people have certain places in that particular society, that might work for them. And they would be in the position to walk away. So that's what I think.
All right. Well, thank you very much. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. As we discuss this phase of the trial, when the defendants, the three defendants who had been charged with the killing of Ahmaud Aubrey, they basically are relying now on the lawyers to wrap everything up to a logical conclusion that would show that they were not responsible for taking illogical action, that the action they took was perfectly logical. How do you believe that the lawyers can do that, given what has been revealed so far in this case? They have to make some extraordinary argument. What would that argument be? Joe from Florida, you're on the air.
Hi, Latrice.
Hello.
Let me bottom line it first, it's self-defense, and I'll explain why. In the first place, if you pull a gun on somebody, you got to be ready to pull the trigger. That's number one. He never should have pulled the gun on the guy because they had no business doing that.
Yes, but that's not what we're arguing. Okay, let me...
No, I understand that, but let me just
say... We're not retrying the case.
He pulls the gun on the guy. The guy, the runner, the jogger, grabs hold of the gun. There's no question about that. Now, the problem is that now if the guy that's holding the gun loses control of the gun to the jogger, then he feels that he's in jeopardy and that the jogger could use the gun and kill him. So therefore, he says, it was self-defense. I didn't want to lose control of the gun. The guy's going to get a hold of the gun, and he's going to kill me. That's one argument that I think they might use. That's really all I have to say. I just don't think that, they can go any place else.
Does that hold water based on the facts as we learned them during the course of the trial?
As far as I know, everything I said was fact. He pointed the gun at him, the guy grabbed the gun, and he pulled the trigger and killed him. Now, why he shot him three times, I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
But that's...
You have a shotgun, and you felt compelled to shoot the person at very close range.
Correct.
Three times.
Because he felt that... I'm not justifying the whole thing.
I know.
It's a sham. I'm just saying what their argument could be. Is that he felt that if he lost control of the gun, then his life was in jeopardy because, and justifiably so, he could have seen, I don't know, that the guy, he must have been angry. I would have been angry if somebody pulled a gun on me like that for just jogging down the street. And by the way, just to maybe correct, I don't think the three guys saw the jogger in the house. They never saw anything. That's my understanding. And somebody did call the
police.
Nor
did they report anything.
No, they did not.
Although they were part of the watch group for the community.
Despite what some of your callers say, I think the guy's they're going to be found guilty, okay? And justified.
All right.
So.
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you,
Joe. Bye.
Thank you. We'll see how it works.
Yes.
Eve from Edgewater, you're on the air. What is likely to be raised in the defense of the three men charged with the murder of Ahmaud Arbery?
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, the question was, what were the lawyers going to use to try to get these guys off?
What do you suspect in this phase of the trial when there's only one thing they have to do, and that is prove that their clients are not guilty of the murder of Ahmaud Arbery? How are they going to get that done in terms of making an argument?
Well, I'm hearing a lot of different things going on, and I'm trying to understand. I thought the men that followed him, the father and son, and the guy taking the video, saw him go into the house under construction, and that's why they thought it was suspicious, because a person jogging, you're jogging, you're running, you're doing exercise, and you're running. Why you stop in a neighborhood that you're not familiar with, and the people don't know you? Why would you put yourself in jeopardy of giving a reason to be messed with? I thought they had seen him. Now, according to the last caller, nobody saw nothing, and that detail came into the play for some reason. But that's what I'm thinking the defense lawyers are going to use to get these guys off, that he went into the construction site, and that gave them reason to think that suspicious, and they weren't going there to shoot him. They were telling him they were trying to detain him for the police to come question why he was in that. I don't know if there was a sign on the construction site saying no trespassing or whatever. But I know if I'm jogging in a strange neighborhood and people don't know me, I'm not going to be going into that. I'm not saying that justified what they did. I'm saying that's what the defense is going to use, that they tried to detain
him. Here's a counter to that. Here's a counter to that. Where in the United States, or maybe this is the first that you're learning of, where in the United States is the punishment for going and looking at a house that is unfenced, has no signs, nobody has said do not enter, the penalty for that is death?
Of course it isn't. No, nowhere. But they were trying to stop him from getting away, keep jogging away. They wanted to hold him there so that the police could come and question him. That's the
But they hadn't called the police. This is an interesting thing.
How do you know that? How do you know that?
Because it came out at trial. They did not even yet call the police. They did not inform the police that they were involved in detaining a suspicious person. They didn't do that. The police had no knowledge of the transaction between the men and Ahmaud Arbery. They had no knowledge of this at all until after Arbery was shot and killed.
I know, the whole thing doesn't make...
These men took the law, or what they believed to be the law, into their own hands, made up the rules as they saw fit, and took action based on their version of what the law says and what the rules are. They agreed. Nothing was taken. Okay, so then what is the charge?
That's not the point. What I was trying to bring up is they were trying to detain him. Then when he grabbed the gun and then the gun went off, then he's dead.
Who detains anybody with a gun? That's the whole point of neighborhood watches and so forth. If you see a crime occurring, your first order of business is to alert the police. They have the guns. They know how to use them, hopefully, and they can make a judgment as to whether a person's actions are within the law.
Right.
You don't just decide
100%.
You're the law and you can do what you want, and you got a shotgun and you have a .357 Magnum and there's a black guy there who needs to be killed. That's not how it works.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. But you were asking what was the defense lawyers going to use, and I thought that these men had seen him go into the house that said no trespassing, and they were trying to detain him, and I thought they had called the police. What's the point of doing what they did if they didn't call the police? That's why I'm
against. Because they had the power to do it, and they were feeling themselves as a powerful force in the community. They had, as I said, not just one gun. They had the shotgun, and they had a .357 Magnum.
Yeah,
and they had a black guy whose life nobody values.
Yeah, well, they should go to jail for the rest of their life then, or they should get the death penalty for what they did if those facts that you just said are all true. But as we know, we don't get the truth from the press, and we don't get the truth from them. It doesn't make any sense to me that they would try to detain this man if they didn't see him do something that they thought they could use as a reason to detain him. Because then they're putting themselves in going to jail.
Let's be clear. The reason you are acting, I should say, as a neighborhood watch is that you are the eyes and ears of the police. When you see something wrong, what's the first thing you're supposed to do? Alert.
Call the police.
Yeah, they never did.
Right, and that didn't happen with Trayvon Martin either, with the Zimmerman guy. He did call, and they told him to leave the kid alone, and they'll come there, and they'll take care of it. But he continued to follow him, because that's why I hate these neighborhood watches, because there's these overzealous people that want to make a name for themselves, and they never could pass the police test, so they get on these neighborhood watches, and then they think they have this power to do whatever they want. And a lot of innocent people get caught up in a net, and then they get hurt, and then it's because of these overzealous neighborhood people that think that they have the right to do whatever they want to do just because they live in a neighborhood and they're part of a neighborhood watch. It's a disgrace.
Well, thank you, E, for calling. Thanks so much for your input today.
Thanks.
Louis from Manhattan, you're on the air. What is the defense likely to put forward as a credible argument in defense of their clients?
Hi, Etrice.
Hello.
I just discovered your show, yeah. And I pretty much like it. But what I wanted to say is, well, the defense is putting what their argument is, and it's about having a black guy running through a white neighborhood and as a person of color. I've experienced some of the same thing. The thing is, even like the defense attorney, he's using the defense like you mentioned this earlier this week, but they're saying that even having black people in the audience, like Sharpton or Jesse Jackson, and I noticed nobody's saying anything about that. I mean, they are talking about it like we have Jesus in the courtroom or whatever. But he doesn't want black people on the jury, and he doesn't want black people in the audience. And to me, that's a major thing right there. They're going to get off because that's what happens in this country, sorry to say.
Yeah, but you're not proving your point. What is your point?
Oh, my point is the history of this country. This is the way things work. I'm surprised we're making this discussion because...
But the history of the country is not the topic of discussion right now. We're talking about a specific case and...
You're asking me what are they going to do as a defense? And they're pretty much saying that if a black man is running to this neighborhood, I mean, the guy was in shorts, I think, and they're accusing him of stealing something. So unless he stole like a watch or something, there's no argument there. Those guys are guilty. But there's no argument. There's nothing they're putting up. What they're putting up is a black man shouldn't be running in the neighborhood. And two, there shouldn't be no black people in the jury, you know, and there's no black people in the audience.
Yeah, but that's not a defense. That's not a defense.
Huh?
You are reading that about the defense lawyers, but that's not a defense. Mm.
I think it was arrogant just for him to say those things, and he brought it up more than on one occasion. So, and basically, I'm no match for you, Chief. I've heard your show before. That's what I want to say. So,
I'm waiting to hear from you how you will arrive at something approximating a defense that these defense lawyers might try as a Hail Mary tactic to get their guys off. What is going to be their logical argument?
Well, they already made it, and I mean, sorry to say to be you, in case they want to call me a black racist, but that argument will fly in white America. You know, it was self-defense. If I chase somebody, I drove a cab in New York City in the 80s, the 90s, or whatever. And 8 guys would get robbed a year or something, a day or whatever, a day or a year. I forgot what the statistic were actually. And I was told that if a guy robs you and he jumps out the car and starts running away, if you take a gun and shoot the guy, you're going to be guilty of murder because you shouldn't shoot him. He was fleeing or something like that. So basically, those rules apply to me as a black person. But if you watch the last 4 years of the Trump administration, whatever, it's a different standard of justice. Whenever I get into a little situation, even a moving violation, a driving violation, the judge is going to throw the book at me. But when it's the other way, at least in New York City, when I go to the court, I never see white people in the courthouse. And I'm assuming they have traffic infractions too. But I'm just saying that's the way it is. And it's wrong, and it needs to be changed. But I think in these cases, what's going to happen is, like you asked before, there's going to be rioting and whatever, and it'll calm down, and everybody will forget about it because Americans have a short memory. How's that?
Okay. You still haven't answered the question, but we'll leave it at that.
The defense already played something. They already made their case. It was a black guy running through a white neighborhood. That's suspicious. And all these black people in the jury, you don't need that. You don't need black people in the courtroom while this is going on. Black guy should have been there, and they defend themselves.
You're not answering the question, though. The question was,
what is the defense
lawyers likely to raise as a legitimate defense of their clients? You haven't answered that.
Well, it's not legitimate. They just, it's illegitimate for me and maybe you and some of the audience, but it is going to fly. Same with the other guy. He's picking his own jury right now. And, the people are not allowed, the people who died are not allowed to be called victims. So, If you want to what are they using to defend themselves? It's not logical, but it is going to fly.
Okay. Well, thank you. We finally got something out of you, but we'll see where this goes. Thank you very much, Louis, for your call today. 888-874-4888. Actually, we can't take any more calls. We're out of time. I want to thank you, but we didn't get the job done today. We didn't. So, you know what that means. Exactly. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.